Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's that time again. Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Today I want to talk about a topic that's of interest to those of you who are interested lay people, or as I like to say, civilians, as well as those of you, my colleagues, the rising cohort of future and recently licensed architects. A topic I want to talk about briefly is ergonomics. Now, one of the things that interests me a lot, because I am a bit of a history buff, is how certain sets of ideas, trends, fandoms, you might say, or themes of thought, or systems of thought, arise, become very current, and then are forgotten or discarded. Stylistically, if we look at the 1980s, we see postmodernism, which was an attempt to integrate some of the ideas from what was otherwise known as traditional or contextual architectural style into something that was received notions of modern architecture, anti the post-World War II Miesian so-called international style. And then postmodernism just faded away, for which many of us are justifiably, I think, pleased that that's gone away. And then there's been a resurgence of interest in modernism, as received through the screed of the Miesian tradition. But when it comes to, let's say, the good green practices, of which we've spoken a great deal here, well, those are nothing new at all. Any of us who grew up with the Whole Earth Catalog, Stuart Brand's fabulous compendium of all good things to get you off the grid and more self-sustaining, well, then that faded away, but now it's back in full force. And although things such as vegetative roofs, also known as green roofs, are quite the thing and suddenly, oh, very new. Well, geez, I mean, here in the United States, some of our early white settlers in the far western lands had sod houses. They'd just cut strips of sod, lay it up, and make an earthen house with the prairie grasses growing on the roof. And if we look at modern architecture, Alvar Aalto had planted roofs. Even if we look at the Maisons Jaoul in Neuilly, a Paris suburb, by Corbusier in the late 1950s. Those houses have planted roofs. So ideas come and then they fade away. Then they come back with even greater vigor. Now, those of you who are great aficionados of texting may notice that your thumbs get kind of tweaky. That's repetitive stress syndrome. One of the things that just astounds me when I look at architects' offices is how badly we take care of ourselves in arranging our workstations. So ergonomics was very, very, very big in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and suddenly everybody was aware of trying to avoid repetitive stress syndrome, and with the advent of everyone having a personal computer, how your hands lay on a computer keyboard was of just unending fascination for many, many people. For the longest time, the authoritative source when it came to the proportions of human bodies, genders, and different ages was a set of data that was put together by the Henry Dreyfuss Associates here in New York City. And if you look at any of the editions of the architectural graphic standards, that American standard put together by Ramsey and Sleeper, published by John Wiley, you'll see in the very beginning pages all of the charts of optimal reach distances and sitting heights adjusted for ages of people and the genders. And it's, if you're into that kind of thing, it's fascinating to look at. We see then in the accessibility laws here in the United States, which all, to a greater or lesser degree, refer to the American National Standards Institute, or ANSI, A-N-S-I, standard A117.1, which is updated about every 10 years. We'll see ergonomic standards for reach and for clearances based on the needs of people in a standard Western style wheelchair. And that's now mandated by law in all of the jurisdictions for buildings beyond a certain density of habitation. That is generally 4 units or greater across all of the United States. There are requirements that go back to the ANSI standard. But so ergonomics was a very hot issue. Now, one of the arguably the best ergonomic chair designer is Niels Diffrient. He's an elder designer. He's an elder statesman of industrial design. He worked for Henry Dreyfuss, and then he went off on his own. And he's created a couple of really fantastic, very best ergonomic chairs. First, the Freedom Chair, which is a very comfortable chair. I have one myself. And then, more recently, the Liberty Chair. The Freedom Chair is articulated so that as you move, and Diffrient believes that it is healthy to be moving, that sitting in a rigid position is unhealthy. And if you've traveled by air recently, you know that the spacing of seats has become so tight that there's really no squirm room. You can't really stretch your legs out very easily, and you certainly cannot recline your chair back very much if you're in cabin class. Diffrient would argue that this is very unhealthy, and I think there's not much with which to disagree there. So the Freedom Chair is articulated, and as the seat back moves back, the seat bottom also moves with it, and the headrest also moves with the seat back, so that at whatever degree of recline or sitting erect, your body is always fully supported, which reduces the stress on the different pressure points in your butt and your legs, which means that you can sit for long periods of time and work. Now, different thinks that the natural position for people to be working in is semi-recumbent, that is to say, partially leaning back. If you look at his Jefferson chair, it's sort of a chaise longue with various articulated work surfaces that swivel in and out, based sort of loosely on a system of writing surfaces that Thomas Jefferson invented and created for his own use, because he was quite a letter writer. And yet, now we look at our own current day work spaces, and the ergonomics are all wrong. According to current ergonomic theory, here I get to be more like the chefs who talk about recipes and how things are actually ideally put together. It's just sort of fun. We don't have too many recipes in architecture, but ergonomics is one area where there is a right way, and then there are many, many, many wrong ways. The ideal ergonomic work situation is that your computer monitor is directly ahead and slightly below your level eye line. If you are sitting erect, the monitor will be just a few degrees lower than your horizontal level eye line, and that as you're typing, your forearms should be parallel with the ground plane. That is to say, straight from your elbow, straight out. And then that your, excuse me, your fingers that are doing the typing should be descending to the keyboard. And that means, therefore, that the keyboard should be angled slightly away from you, not, as you commonly see, angled up towards you, but away. So a lot of the standard keyboards out there with the little feet that are supposed to flip up, well, they're totally wrong. Think of a concert pianist you may have seen. Perhaps you've been to a piano recital. Perhaps you've watched really good pianists on television. You'll see that as they are seated at the piano, their forearms are parallel with the floor, and the arch of their fingers is descending to the keyboard. Well, that is perfect ergonomics. Also, as you're seated, the upper part of your leg between your hip and your knee should likewise be parallel with the floor plane, and your knee angle should be 90 degrees, not an acute angle, not an obtuse angle. You should be sitting 90 degrees with your thighs parallel with the ground. Now here I am seated in one of our luxurious studio chairs, which I'm sure someone found on the street, and I'm sitting with my knees sort of up in the air. How much more comfortable would I be if we had some nice ergonomic chairs here? Of course, I could always go and find a pillow, I suppose, and I'd be more ergonomic. But we don't really think about these things in ordinary life. We just suffer with it. And then we get sprains from being in the wrong position. And so this was a very big deal. And lots of firms invested in adjustable keyboard supports that would swivel out so that the keyboard would be exactly the right height. But then that means then that the keyboard is free of whatever work surface your monitor is sitting on, and that gets into being close enough to see the fine work on the screen. So ergonomics became a rather difficult thing to really achieve. So eventually people just sort of ignored it. There was a real heightened awareness of lack of ergonomics, which led to workplace discontent, and there was a lot of litigation about carpal tunnel syndrome and repetitive stress syndrome that seems to have died away somewhat. And with it, the awareness of ergonomics seems to have died away. But it's a very basic and essential thing, which no doubt will come back as we gradually improve the quality of our homes and our workplaces in terms of interior air quality and a greater availability of daylight, and using materials that do not outgas volatile organic compounds, and that use less source energy. That's the buzzword for energy that comes from some source that's distant from where you are, otherwise known as the grid. So as we improve the quality of our buildings, I think we'll start looking again to the ergonomics of how we undertake our tasks. But interestingly, all along, there's been this cookware company, OXO, O-X-O. You know their stuff. It looks good. But it's not cookware. It's not kitchen gadgets designed to look good, but rather to work well, to be easy to use, to be easy to grasp, to be easy to operate. If we look at our parallel universe here at Heritage Radio Network, where just about everybody else on the station is talking about cooking and food issues. If we look at the amount of effort that's been put into making, let's say, a well-balanced chef knife and a handle that's going to work, or a blade that's going to work well for its intended task. If you look at all of that effort and think about something as simple as a professional knife, sometimes I wish that much effort had gone into making a better, let's say, a better computer mouse. And for a long time there, people were working on things like this, and then it kind of faded away, and it defaulted back to the funny little half a clamshell design that's not particularly ergonomic. Oh, yes, along the way, then there were the track balls with the big, almost billiard ball size ball that you could move around with the palm of your hand, and some people became very adept at being able to even draw using a track ball. I know a lot of graphic designers that still prefer to use a track ball because it's just simply better over a long day of doing graphic design with a computer. But there are so many areas where ergonomics, it's just sort of forgotten. Just today, I had a wonderful ergonomic experience. I was out for a walk through Central Park here in New York City. And then I was walking along Fifth Avenue, admiring and despising some of the buildings that I saw along there, just south of the Metropolitan Museum. And I reacquainted myself with the monument that's there, just opposite the Frick House. Do you know the Frick Gallery? I think his name was Henry Frick. Anyway, Mr. Frick was one of Andrew Carnegie's partners in the steel business and made himself quite a fortune. And he has this rather large house with a fenced-in yard, a couple of different yards, right on Fifth Avenue. And the Frick Gallery has a wonderful collection of different kinds of paintings, and there are rooms, and there's an interior court with fountains. It's really worth a visit when you're in New York City, or those of you who are here in New York, you should go past the Frick Gallery once every few years, just to refresh your senses. In any case, across from the Frick House, in Central Park, built into the fence between the sidewalk and the parklands, is a monument. One of only two monuments that I know of like it in my world, anyway, in my experience. And this is for Richard Hunt, who was a very popular Beaux-Arts-style American architect. And he has a lovely semicircular, I think it's called an ephedra, this if you took the Pantheon and sliced it in half, that would be an ephedra. Anyway, it's a flattened, oval, semicircular-ish peristyle with columns. And then there are, as was popular in the 19th century, there's seating built in on either side of this handsome bust of the architect. And so I decided to sit down. And the seat was perfect for me. I am absolutely American National Standard average height, 5'9¾". You can look it up. It's right in the Henry Dreyfuss charts. Typically American standard average male height. And this stone bench is so comfortable. The seat was slightly raked. The leading edge, and this is all stone, mind you, is curved just so as to be really comfortable underneath. And then the back was curved just ever so slightly forward, which was interesting. But it was comfortable. And then just at shoulder height, the stone was rolled back with just a very nice curve, and I was able to just sit and lean my head back and watch humanity walk by and roll past on Fifth Avenue, and it was really pleasant. And this is an aspect of what happens when you get ergonomics, that is, adapting design to human proportion right. And it was a wonderful experience. Now, in residential architecture, we tend to go by what is generally accepted or standard or traditional kitchen counters at either 30 inches for someone who's seated or in a wheelchair, or 36 inches for someone who's standing doing something in the kitchen. But these heights really, they don't always make a lot of sense. People who are shorter find a 36-inch counter a little too high. People who are taller find it a little too low, and they find themselves having to stoop when they're doing preparation work. One of the tenets of good modern design that you will see if you're ever fortunate enough to go in this one Philip Johnson house. It's a townhouse in the East 50s in Manhattan. When I was a student, one of our professors got us in to see this house, and we noticed that the lavatories, the hand-washing sinks in the bathrooms, were high. So that your hands were right, you know, just fell right into the wash basin instead of your having to bend over to wash your hands. And that height and that arrangement of a sink came straight away from the time before there was central plumbing, and there would be a tabletop at, say, 29 or 30 inches, and a wash basin sitting on top of it. And then once there was central plumbing, well, the basin was just let down into that counter surface, and there it remains even to this day, where our vanities are not ideal for anybody. So it's a very interesting, and it's got a lot of potential aspect of, hey, isn't it about time that we reinvestigated a little bit of ergonomics. But you have to be careful. You have to try these things out. That's what we call that iterative design. You have to really test out your assumptions. Now, oftentimes, on a large building, we'll have a mock-up. We'll have a mock-up apartment with all of the millwork. Just so, as it's designed at that point, before the millwork goes into production, and we'll test it out. This is an ideal time for those of you, my younger colleagues, to speak up to the older set, people like me, and say, well, hey, what about ergonomics? What about comfort? What about convenience? Instead of just taking it as the status quo. It's a great way to differentiate one project from another. Well, some might say, well, I don't like that proportion. It doesn't look beautiful. But what is more beautiful than something that is easy to use, like the OXO line of kitchen utensils? To me, beauty is in function. I don't want to drag out that old saw that's attributed to Louis Sullivan, form follows function. I've done a little research on that. Anyway, it wasn't Sullivan was just repeating something that had been around for quite some time. Actually, it was Mr. Greenough, who was a physical fitness freak in the 1860s, who first came up with the phrase "form follows function." But I say that beauty comes from ease of use, ease of experience. Good daylight, good air, good functionality. Good proportion, that's proportion to the human body. If you're interested in learning more about Niels Defferent, you can go to the website of the company called Human Scale. It's all one word. They manufacture his chairs. They have a variety of ergonomic products. This is not a plug for them. They are not yet a supporter of burning down the house, but I hope that in the future they will be. You can also just pull out your copy of Architectural Graphic Standards and have a look at those very well-researched Henry Dreyfuss Associates charts and think about how should we make the proportions of our spaces easier to use and more comfortable. That's all I wanted to talk to all of you about today. You know, for the last 110 or 112 episodes, I've been doing hour-long shows. I'm the last person on Heritage Radio Network doing an hour-long show, and I think in the future we'll just keep it a little bit more brief and have fewer musical breaks and perhaps have a little more punch and a little more potency. Let me know what you think. You can always write to us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. This has been Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Thank you for listening. Keep the faith.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.